Show.
People say it's not good, or who cares if maybe it could be shot better. I love it, and this is what I want to do. And I just, you don't see that much pure love for things. It's more and more rare that you see it. It's people that become defensive of it and just say, like, that's not what I want. Screw you. I don't want that. That looks stupid. That looks awful. So it's so good to see that kind of positive side of it.
You're absolutely right, Dan. That was a great speech. I'm going to put some music under that, by the way, when I edit this, because it was so good.
They are insane.
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
With Mint frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
And it's real!
I'm ready to irradiate your existing brain cells.
Many such journeys are possible. Let me be your gateway to Star Trek. My name is Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about Star Trek, and I'm hoping that you just want to listen. This is exciting ground for me. We're launching now, finally, on the Feral Audio Network, and man, this is going to be great. This is going to be great because it's the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. It's been a long road getting from there to here. But we've made it. And my time is finally near. I think that's what it is. And my time is now. And your time is now to embrace and love Star Trek. You know, last year we had Star Wars. That's great. Earlier this year we had Marvel Civil War. Great film. Love that film. But now it's time for Star Trek. Now it's time for us to put on our Star Trek Mr. Spock helmet, sold in the 1970s. Look it up on Google. Has a big flashing red light on it. We're going to put that on and talk about Star Trek, because there's nothing better. And there's nothing more important. This is a seminal moment in my life. I'm having my Star Trek midlife crisis. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to you about many things when I'm talking on this podcast. There's going to be something it's going to lie a lot to you about. But on this, I'm not. I'm at a point in my life where I don't know what to do anymore. I've accomplished a lot. I've failed at a lot. I have kids. I have a wife. My wife's right outside the other door. Honey, say hi.
Hi.
That's my wife. I have a wife and two great kids and a career which is okay. It's a pretty good career. I was on a TV show, The Invisible Man, for 2 years, a sci-fi show. Gosh, if I would have quit right then, that would have been great. I was on a movie called Idiocracy. Super fun, and 10 years later, people still love it. I've been on shows like Rick and Morty and all this sort of stuff, but at the end of the day, it still comes back to this. Everything I do began with Star Trek. I'm close, but not at the age of 50. And so I'm trying to figure out who I am. One of those things that's going to help me is finally coming to fruition. I'm going to Riverside, Iowa this summer. That's absolutely true. In less than 3 weeks, I'm going there. Why? Well, if you listen to my earlier podcasts, you know it's because that is the future birthplace of Captain James Tiberius Kirk. Here's a little side note. You know, Tiberius was actually an emperor, which wasn't that great of an emperor. He's a little bit of an officious guy. You know, whether or not he was a good emperor is sort of debatable. I looked up this guy, tried to figure out why Roddenberry named him Tiberius. I'm not quite sure, to be honest. I haven't quite figured that out yet. But Tiberius as an emperor back in the Roman age, not that great of an emperor. A little bit of a bureaucrat. When at his best, he was overly officious bureaucrat who got stuff done. At his worst, he was a little bit of a tyrant, which sort of applies to Captain James T. Kirk, but not really. I'm going to come back from that aside and tell you right now that I'm going to Riverside, Iowa, because that has been the place that has been anointed as the birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk. And every year they have a Trek Fest, trekfest.org. You can go check it out, which is just delightful. People from all around Iowa and maybe all over the world gather to celebrate the birth of Captain James T. Kirk, and the birthplace of it, and Star Trek in general. And so I started a GoFundMe a couple weeks ago, and if you want, you can find that, and you can go donate. I would appreciate that. But this is more about the podcast. You don't owe me anything. I don't owe you anything. I don't know how that works. But the point is that I'm making a lot of this stuff happen, and this podcast is part of it. So if you're listening, thank you. Thank you very much. Kapla, as we say, which is actually not appropriate. But here we are. We're close to the 50th. It's in September. And so much is happening now. It's like finally Paramount and CBS woke up and together, I don't think they planned on it, but they have decided to re-embrace Star Trek. Now, there's been the movies, obviously, but they're going for it this year. They're going for it hard because Paramount has their third movie, Star Trek: Beyond. Sure. And now CBS is getting in the game. They have their own new series coming out, untitled yet, but they released a trailer, and I was excited about that. That trailer had absolutely zero information. If you go back to the old Deep Space Nine trailers they used to put on back in the 90s, and those are available on the interwebs, you can watch those, and they have nothing as well, which is pertinent to what the story was eventually about. It was on a space station. That's all they knew. This, they don't even tell you what time frame it's going to be. They promise new worlds, new crews, new heroes, new villains. They pluralize everything to keep it completely ambiguous. And yet I was excited. For the first time in a long time, I was excited at the prospect that the Star Trek world would be reinvigorated. But we have a triskelion of directions we can go. And that's the third part of it, too, which is fan films. You know, Paramount, Star Trek Beyond, recently had an event, and we're going to be talking to someone about that in a minute, where they brought people in, they showed them the trailer, they had Chris Pine and Carl Urban and Zach Quinto over there answering questions. And one of the more important things I think they did was that they dropped a lawsuit that Paramount had brought against a fan film called Axanar, Star Trek Axanar. It's about the war between the Klingons with Garth of Izar before he went crazy, all that sort of stuff. And originally they're going to sue the pants off him, and they had just and probable cause to do that because basically this film was using all of the intellectual property and kind of blatantly so. And they raised about $1 million for this. And Paramount said, let's not do that. But they lucked out in this because Paramount really needed to make a nice PR gesture because they kind of messed up with the first trailer on Beyond. It was a little bit too much of Fast and Furious and not too much of Federation and Ferengi. I don't know if that works. So one of the things that they sort of jettisoned off as they jettisoned off debris to kind of throw us off the trail as they did in Balance of Terror. You can listen to that episode. It's a good episode. We talked to Stan and we talked to Decius. Is that they announced that they had worked out an agreement with this Axanar film. Now, what that means, I don't know, but what it has done is it paved the way for fan films to continue. And this is, if J.J. Abrams has done anything positive to the franchise, and he has, but one of the largest things I think he's done, because he's such a Star Wars fan, and he knows what the power of the Star Wars films are, the fan films, is that he convinced Paramount to drop this lawsuit, or at least to mitigate it somewhat, so that these fan films could continue. And that brings me to my point, is that fan films are beginning to flourish a little bit. And in particular, there's one I've been watching called Star Trek Continues. And if you were to take that series, if you were to take the old series, it's based on TOS, it's continuing the mission, the five-year mission, which stopped at year 3. And it's replaced it with all sorts of actors. And it's rebuilt the sets faithfully. And it has the music. It's even rescored some new music. And everyone's in the right costumes and everything. And if you squint your eyes, and if you try real hard and you pretend like Star Trek lost about 80% of its budget, it's almost Star Trek, the original series. And you know what? Sometimes that's okay. When this new episode came out, I said, yeah, I want to watch that. And so I turned it on, and I watched this one. It's called Come Not Between Dragons. It's okay. It's not great. I watched some other bad original series episodes just recently. I'm like, you know, this isn't terrible. But I want to get some clarity on the world of Star Trek, on the universe of Star Trek, which is suddenly flourishing. So I'm going to talk to my friend. We're going to talk to my friend right now. Hopefully this will work. This is my friend Dan Merle. And Dan, we tried to contact before, but he was off to Georgia doing something important. Dan's a good friend. I really like Dan. And Dan has come into his own. He's my Gary Mitchell. He's a person who has received almost unlimited geek power. And now he's very powerful. And so it took about 4 different opportunities for me to get to him. But I think I can finally get him. And we're going to try this new thing where I'm going to actually call him via Google Hangouts and see if this works. Let's see. I'm calling him right now. Oh, that sounds good. That sounds promising. Yes, see input there.
Hello.
Is this Dan Merle?
Yes, it is.
The Dan Merle?
Well, not the only one, but I'm me, yes.
Dan, this is Mike. Mike McCafferty, how are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Good. Dan, you're on the Feral Audio Network right now. I hope you're okay with that.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And Dan, you know what I want to do right now? You know what I just want to do right now?
Okay. Yes. What, Mike?
I just want to talk about Star Trek.
Oh, that's great.
I know.
That's what I love doing all the time.
I know. So let me put a little bit of backstory here. Dan Merle is my good friend. My friend, James Kirk. And Dan is a lover of the old series. This is correct, right, Dan?
I am a lover of original series. I'm also a big next-gen guy.
Sure. So are we all. So say we all. That's Battlestar Galactica. But
yes.
But you and I, we've had some conversations about the old series. You definitely get a lot of my references. And so as we move between the different series, I have found someone who in another reality I might call friend.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, but I've been having a tough time getting a hold of you, Dan, because you become super powerful, Dan. Do you know that?
I don't know if I would call it super powerful.
Well, then it very powerful. Let's find our adjective or adverb here. So I know Dan for like what, 12 years, Dan, is that right?
Something like that. I moved out to LA in 2005, and I met you very shortly thereafter. So yeah, like 11, 12 years.
Yeah. So, because I started doing Channel 101, in like 2005 or 2006, I guess, after my son was born.
Yep.
My son. And you and I started hanging out in those circles. I don't think we did anything together for a little while, but we knew of each other. Is this correct?
We did. We were familiar faces. We were what I like to call a "Hey, how you doing?" friendship.
Exactly. Channel 101, if you don't know, it's something created by Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub. It's a monthly 5-minute short film competition, which had this diaspora of really incredible people like Lonely Island and Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub, and now Dan Merle. And now Dan Merle has joined that pantheon of excellence. Because, Dan, what are you doing nowadays? Tell me.
I'm currently a producer at Screen Junkies. Most people would probably know us from Honest Trailers, which is our big series. But we've also kind of spun off other stuff. We have a show called The Screen Junkies Show and Movie Fights, which I'm on a fair amount. And then we also have Screen Junkies Plus, which is our own little kind of pay network that we started last year. And I have a show on that as well as helping to do a bunch of other stuff. So it's really just a bunch of people that love movies talking about movies. It's kind of a dream job.
It is. Dan, when I knew Dan back in the day, he had this huge bookcase filled with DVDs. Do you remember that?
I mean,
like it was in that old apartment.
I do.
We shot like Halo Minute stuff and all sorts of crazy stuff in there. That's a deep dive. We shot all sorts of crazy stuff.
Oh, wow, the Halo Minute.
Yeah, that was the glory days, right? That website's still up, by the way. We still make a little bit of money off that, if you can believe it or not.
I have to go see it.
Yeah, no, you don't. You're good.
Okay. Best left of the past.
It's best left of the past of the kids looking for cheat codes and clicking on the ads. But Dan had this huge library of DVDs on there, and I was thinking, man, this guy watches a lot of movies. What's he ever going to do with that? Like how many jobs, like beyond like Blockbuster, is going to be facilitating that sort of knowledge? And then you found it, didn't you?
Well, I'll tell you, Mike, it's one, and I was lucky enough to have found it out.
Yes, you did. It's so great. It's so exciting. You are like one of those good, like there's a lot of people who do well in life, and I hate them for it. Because you know, like I'm competitive with them or whatever, but you're a person who it's like the more popular you become, the more excited I become. I have like almost no jealousy towards you, a tiny bit, but almost zero jealousy, Dan. Because you do it
well,
so
thank
well.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No, because first of all, you start out on this show as an editor, right? And then you start to insert yourself in the film fights, right?
Well, I was a part-time editor, and then I moved into a full-time editor, and then I started to help writing, and then, yeah, but if we're talking on camera, we do this show called Movie Fights, and we started, we were literally just going to do this dumb show, for like 6 episodes to burn off some YouTube hour requirements that we didn't think anybody would ever watch it.
Right.
And somehow people connected to it. And so, yeah, I am on Movie Fights a lot. And most people know, like right now I'm the champ, which we have this championship belt and I've won. I've defended it a few times. My reign is almost over, I suspect, but that's kind of how on-camera stuff started. I kind of stepped out from behind my darkened monitor room. And so now I'm more producing than editing, but yeah, it's so much fun because it's really just talking about movies, which is what I would be doing anyway. I just happened to have found this crazy, insane job that lets me do it for fun and a little bit of money, which is nice.
That's you're living the dream right now. This is it's absolutely phenomenal, and I'm so glad that you got your way on camera, and now you're like a geek household name, sort of. I mean, you know, I see like. I'm watching a video one day and there's like a lower third ad banner for like Screen Junkies and there's your face like, ah, Dan, what are you doing?
I've heard about this. It never popped up for me, but I keep hearing people like, oh, I was watching a video and you popped up in the middle. I'm like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. It must be an oversight.
Yeah. Well, don't worry about it. I clicked that X really quickly. I corrected that oversight, Dan. I mean, I lingered over for a minute. Maybe I got you an extra penny, like because of, I don't know, the metrics, like, oh, this person looked at it for 10 seconds instead of, you know, three. And then I dispatched you. I'm sorry. I
appreciate that penny. Every penny counts.
It does. It does indeed. All right. But so that's your backstory and that's fine. And Dan's been a good friend for many, many years. And like
I have been and always shall be.
Oh, see, this is why you're here, Dan. Now let's put all that other garbage, that Screen Junkie garbage to the side. Although yeah. You did have me on one of the shows about Star Trek, about changing
once.
The cast. Yeah,
yes.
Once. And I think I said something sort of insensitive about blind people, I think, that you'd never put in the edit. I'm not sure about that. Remember that? And you're like, ooh, I don't know if we can say that.
I've pitched show ideas before that we've already done, so I can't even remember what we've done in the past.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, I remember I said something about it. But anyways, I made most of the cut there. But let's talk about you and Star Trek, Dan. When did you first start watching Star Trek?
I first started watching Star Trek. I must have been about 9 or 10. And I remember I had, when I was young, like 2 days a week, I would go to either my grandmother's house or my friend's house after school. And then 3 days a week, my mom had somebody who... she would watch me for a few hours after school, you know, part time during the week. And she talked, you know, we would talk and she said that she started talking about Star Trek. She's like, so Star Trek, it was on when I was younger. I'm like, I've never seen it. And it just so happened that every day at 4 o'clock on our local CBS station, they would run reruns of Star Trek. So I remember my first episode, the first one I watched was Devil in the Dark.
Oh,
and yeah. So I started watching Star Trek every day after school, and then that led me to Next Generation, mm-hmm. and opened the doors to the movies and everything else. So it all started with Star Trek reruns after school at like 4 o'clock every day.
Ah, that's perfect. That's perfect. Now, you know, the reruns would come and go for the old series. I don't know if you know about this.
Like, yeah.
Because they only had 76 episodes, and the FCC says you can't run them if you have less than 100 over and over again.
Right.
So they give him a break. So see, Dan knows this stuff. I'm telling the audience right now, Dan, we're sharing, you know, information for them. But so you actually were lucky to get to like, to have those on every day. And so you watched
for a while.
Yeah, for a while. And then they'd take a break, then try and bring them back every 6 months. And it was great. So you started watching the old series and then eventually did you just transition straight into TNG or?
I did, because I must have been 9 or 10, because this was running concurrently with, I believe, the 6th or 7th season of Next Generation.
Ah, okay.
So I know for a fact that I was enough into it that I was way into Star Trek by the time Next Generation wrapped up, because I taped the fan vote top 5 marathon hosted by Jonathan Frakes that aired directly before All Good Things, which was the Next Generation finale. So,
yeah.
And that was in 90... four. So I must have been really into it by then.
God, I forgot about that. Then I'm Jonathan Frakes, and now here's your number one episode. Oh, so good. Wow.
Exactly. So good.
I want to go on a slight tangent. Jonathan Frakes, good actor or person we love?
I think it's person we love.
Okay.
I think he's one of those guys that was perfect for that role.
Okay, okay. I'm letting you say that first. I'm going to agree with you on that. I love Jonathan Frakes. I love his, you know, he's just like this big chest that comes through all the time, right? And just, you know,
yes.
it's like he's just a chest. He's like, you know, shields up. And, he, you know, like you can see him like sort of lowering his chin into his chest, puffing it up there, like the whiskers tickling the costume. And he says something important.
Yeah.
And then he kind of like, you know, slides off. So,
well, and my favorite thing was that when he would leave the room, he'd lead with the shoulder. So, yeah, he took the center of the chest and then he'd walk out with the shoulder leading. It was amazing. But I will say, very good director.
Yes.
Good director.
Yeah.
Jonathan.
Underused. I mean, like, he should be directing more. I don't know if he's directing now. I don't know what his life is like, but he did direct First Contact and then Insurrection, I think.
Insurrection, I believe. And I think he's directed a lot of television.
Has he? Okay, so, I'll buy that.
Good director, Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah, yeah. So he, you know, he leads with his shoulder and his chest, but within that is his heart, right? So that's why he's a good director.
Exactly.
All right, so
yeah.
So you were sort of right kind of in like the high watermark of Star Trek, like that like 94-ish kind of era where it was like the seventh season, sixth season, and everyone was just like batshit crazy for Star Trek.
Right. It was like the top of the wave of the second breaking wave of Star Trek fandoms. If the original series was the first wave, the Next Generation, that kind of hype was, and DS9 and Voyager all kind of concurrently happening, was like the top of the second wave of the huge surge of Star Trek fandom.
Right. So moving on with that, did you transition into Deep Space Nine and Voyager and Enterprise? How far did you go? How far did that wave last?
Deep Space Nine for me, because again, I was 10, 11, was a little too slow for me at that age. It just never quite grabbed me because it didn't have the Trek through the stars parts. It was all very, because this was early Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
It was before they got into all the stuff that I've heard of in the later seasons where they actually go out and there's wars and stuff. This was all kind of like, you know, Odo's after Quark because something's going down, and it was all just kind of like, it seemed very, very static for somebody that age. So I never got into DS9. Voyager, I watched for a couple seasons, I think, but never really, I didn't really hang with that because then I started getting into 13, 14. And while I still love the Star Trek that I already knew, I just get into other stuff. And so I kind of put Voyager aside.
So then
Enterprise, I did not watch until the last episode.
When it was all a dream. It was all a holographic projection.
It was all a holodeck projection.
But
that was supposed to have been seamlessly integrated into a Next Generation episode, despite the fact that Troy and Riker looked 30 years older.
And a little bit heavier. We gotta be honest. They're a little thicker.
Just a bit.
Yeah. The chest was still there, but there were other parts which were also there. So, what a weird way to just kind of dump on that entire like series, right? It's just like, it was all a dream. It was all a holographic projection. Maybe this never happened. And
not even in a landmark episode. Like if it had been like, we got to take a break from Captain Picard being trapped by the Borg to get advice. That's great. There's like the Pegasus. Like that was a good episode. But like that's what the linchpin of the end of Enterprise is. Is like, I'm struggling with this Pegasus decision. Like, come on.
Yeah, it adds nothing to the Pegasus episode, and it detracts
100%.
I mean, like, we should go back and we should watch the Pegasus, and like, when did he go to the holodeck? Like when was it, you know, like, they're like at red alert most of the time, aren't they? I mean, like, you know, Commander Riker to the ready room. It's like, where is he? You know, he's in holodeck 4 with Troy. Like, all right, give him a space, I guess, right? I mean, there's no justification for him spending like 9 hours in there, right?
So bizarre.
Yeah. So after that, you sort of filtered out a little bit. You watched the movies. The movies kind of filtered, also weaned us off Star Trek, didn't they? With Insurrection,
a little
Nemesis,
bit. By the time we got to Nemesis, I was a DVD only watcher for the movies. I did not see Nemesis in the theaters.
Oh wow.
But I still watched the old episodes. I never completely put Trek aside. It's just the newer stuff I kind of fell away from over time.
Yeah, you can never put those away now, especially the old ones. I'm watching the old ones now, Dan, like, because it's like it's the 50th anniversary. And I don't know if I told you about this. Do you know my big plan to go Iowa in like 3 weeks? Have I told you about this? Or
I've seen this. I've seen this online. Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure you've seen it. You haven't contributed, but that's okay. I'm gonna, you know, at least one penny, Dan. Come on. I mean, I gave you a penny. You can give it back to my GoFundMe.
You know what, Mike? I podcast rules. I have to stick to it. I will donate at least a penny.
Oh, look at least that. A penny. Great. No, you know, because your time is more valuable than a penny. So this is what you're contributing right now. I don't care about that. I'm okay. I want you, Dan. This is what I want. That was just a bit. It's always a bit, right? But the point is, I've been watching the old Star Trek episodes to kind of get ready for all this. And it's interesting now because as I watch them, I realize how much they are simply like fables or just parables. You know, I mean, the stories are so simplistic now, you know?
Yeah.
There's no nuance of character. Like TV shows we watch now, you're going to be watching this character change over 7 seasons. Episode to episode. But these characters, they're iconic. They're almost like Greek theater characters.
They are. They're very broad. They're very, you know, I mean, the humanization of the characters really happened more in the movies than in the TV show. You always had that dynamic. You always had the one humanization that was allowed was Kirk, Spock, and Bones.
Yep.
Those three kind of got to grow and develop and do whatever. But everybody else, Uhura, Scotty, Sulu, Chekhov from season 2 on, they all were just kind of, their character was, I'm a person at doing my job at my station.
Right, right. But even Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, you knew what you were going to get from them most of the time. You're going to get variances on who they were. But like, you know, like I'm watching Game of Thrones and characters change allegiances all the time. It's like, I have no idea who this character is or what they're going to do next, which is exciting in the moment. But from a longer standpoint, it's like, well, you know, third season, that guy was just an asshole. You know, I mean, Kirk right. is always going to be the same person from episode to episode. You know, it's a comfort almost, you know, that we can watch the story unfold without having to worry about, well, you know, is Kirk going to kill Spock this time because, you know, he's got a drug deal on the side? I mean, you know, there's none of that variance, you know, which would be okay. It'd be a good episode.
Right.
So that's
be a departure.
Yeah, it certainly would. It certainly would. I'd pay to see that. But so let me and like I'm kind of teeing it up because I wanted to talk to you sort of about the present place where we are right now. With there's like a I call it the triskelion of choices we have right now.
Yes.
Because we have the movie, which is coming out, which I'm going to talk to you in a second. The TV show, which they had a trailer they dropped. And the fan films now, too. And I know I've implored you to watch some of these. I don't know if you have or not. But they're definitely I want to bring that into conversation a little bit.
Sure.
But we're almost at another high water mark. And I want to get your sense on this because you've got the pulse on this. You were at the Paramount event.
Yes, the fan event for Star Trek Beyond. I was there. I was in the audience. I saw they had the DC people talk about their Trinity. They had my Trinity, which would be the actors playing Kirk, Spock, and Bones. You had Chris Pine there. You had Deckard Quinto there. You had Carl Urban there. JJ was there. Justin Lin was there. They trotted everybody out.
Yeah. Now they did that.
I think because they knew that the fans did not like that first trailer.
No, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, they hated that with the motorcycles and the Beastie Boys. Not that those two things are bad, but you put them in Star Trek, and it's like, what are we doing? So yeah, this was kind of the mea culpa from them.
A little bit. Plus, they did a really great thing, which is they didn't announce. That was the other thing. Nobody knew what was going to happen.
Right.
We just knew we were going to see something. They said we were going to see a new trailer, which we did. They also showed about 5 minutes of the movie. But what was the highlight for me was that they took the audience. Everybody went outside the bleachers and they dedicated this one of the streets on the Paramount lot. They named it Leonard Nimoy Way, and they dedicated it that night, which was the highlight for me.
That's crazy.
You know, such a great idea to do that and to do that with the fans there and his family was there. You know, Zachary Quinto gave a great speech. And, you know, I thought that was a fantastic thing for them to do because it really showed like this isn't just them trying to market the movie. They're like, no, we really want the fans to experience something unique, you know, special for you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's that will out of everything they did, that'll be the most lasting in, as far as like from a physical standpoint, you know, whatever this movie does, the fact that this says Leonard Nimoy Way on it, you know, was a nice touch. It was definitely like a a whole night full of please love us again. We're sorry about that first thing, that first trailer. How was the footage beyond the trailer? You saw like 5 minutes without going into too many spoilers. What did you think?
Well, it was largely spoilery, so I won't give it too much away. It was extended versions of what you've seen in the trailers.
Sure.
But I will say they showed a longer version of, you see in the second trailer, there's a scene of Kirk and Bones having a drink together.
Mm-hmm.
So they showed an extended version of that, and I actually enjoyed it. It had the subtlety that Star Trek Into Darkness did not, which is that it is an echo of a familiar scene. But it is not a carbon copy of a poor carbon copy of it. It's, you know, it's one of those things that if you don't know the movies and the original lore, it's perfectly fine. If you do, you enjoy it that much more because it's, you know, very reminiscent of the opening scene of Star Trek II when they share a drink and he gives him the glasses and the birthday and everything.
Ah, great. Okay, great. That makes me happy. So coming out of it,
they're not just quoting their lines back to each other. Actually, it's a new scene. It's within the context of the movie. It's just that setting is familiar and they're dynamic.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it's, well, I mean, and Carl Urban, and I just read today that he almost didn't do the film. He almost bowed out. I don't know if you saw that. He kind of intimated that he almost, like, Justin Lin had to talk him into doing this film. Seriously underused. Seriously underused as,
yes,
as a counterbalance to Spock's logic and Kirk's kind of intuition.
Yes. So, well, and the other thing that they kind of promised, and this may be a reason why he came back to do it, is that, you know, a lot of this movie they've been talking about is kind of the crew all finding their dynamic, which is what I'd been hoping they would have been done in the last two movies.
Right.
But it's more about them kind of really facing their first test away from Starfleet and the Federation. They're actually on their 5-year mission finally, which is great. but they're saying there's a lot of Spock bones this movie. They're teamed up. They're, you know, so I suspect that might've been what got him back, because Spock and Bones, that's the best dynamic. I think of any of the series across whatever, it's Spock and Bones.
Right. Because they both have the captain's ear. And so when they're put together without him, there's nobody to arbitrate. There's no, you know, wall
exactly
between them. And I'm hoping that, I mean, again, and someone mentioned this before, I can't remember if it was on the podcast, that, you know, it was this trinity of logic and humanity separated by Kirk, who always had to make that decision. And the past two films, they've sort of moved McCoy to like the fourth slot to put in Uhura to have like the love interest between Spock and Uhura, you know, which is a totally, you know, created thing. But it left out those conversations of, is this the right thing to do? You know, I mean, you know, where you have both sides of the argument, you know, your passion versus the logic of the situation. And then Kirk has to make the right decision. And he just became sort of like the punchline generator, right? You know, we're going on another mission, you know, and it's like, oh, he's great.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No.
It's like, yeah. He just became this weird sidekick. And so if they bring him back, that'll make me much happier. The trailer got me a little more on board. I'm willing to see this film now. After the first trailer, I was like, man, I just feel like they blew it again. But I know they did reshoots. Hopefully they're going to kind of, you know, they'll get to what they're supposed to get.
They did. And so, I did not lose my mind. A lot of people saw, Star Trek fans especially, saw the first trailer and were just like, oh my God, what is this? I kind of reserved a little bit of judgment because I understand from a marketing standpoint, Star Trek is a tough sell. It's always been a bit of a tough sell. And I get that in the age of Guardians and Fast and the Furious, if you want initial interest for your movie, you almost have to market it like that. So if the second trailer had been like that, I would have been a little more skeptical. But when the first one came out, I was like, well, yeah, that doesn't feel like Star Trek. But I also kind of get that you've got to try to attract an outside crowd.
Absolutely. You have to fill the seats. I mean, you have to hit those four quadrants, as they used to say, you know, the young men, young women, older men, older women. And Star Trek fans are, you know, they're like in their own quadrant, you know, they're in the alpha quadrant, I guess.
Exactly.
So they had to service the masses. I think, what they did is that they had to, I mean, their problem after the first one is like, have we serviced the masses so much that we've disenfranchised the core, which if you lose the core, you're never going to make another movie again. That Star Trek, you know, I mean, it's just because they will hate it. So I think this was them coming back and saying, no, we did listen to your notes before. This is a movie that you can enjoy as well. So,
right.
Cause you and I both had problems with Into Darkness. We've discussed this off mic, but,
yes, that's putting it lightly. I have massive problem. Like I've always said, William, it was like, what do you think of Into Darkness? I think, well, as a movie fan, I thought it was okay. As a Star Trek fan, it is offensive to me.
Yes.
Just because, you know, I'm not precious about a lot of things. And if you want to take a new spin on a story, I'm totally on board with that. I don't have any qualms with that. But to take a story and just kind of, you know, it's kind of square peg, round hole, just kind of jam it into a movie and replay moments that have not been earned yet with these characters and, you know, just kind of coast on the memory of this other movie. It just really hit me the wrong way. It's just like, you know, it seemed like a cynical ploy to get fans to like the movie when you would have been much better served to just tell an original story. Or if you're going to take that story, spin it off in a completely different direction.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, have Khan actually be the hero or you know, see his genesis or his genesis from the start. You know, I mean, like, give us something other than just Google search terms of Star Trek words and then throw them into the script and hope that everyone doesn't, you know, pay attention enough. You know, we're like,
you know, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of the same problem I have with the new X-Men movie, which is, you know, when you restart a timeline, that means you've got a fresh field. You can do whatever you like. The world is your playground. And so when you go back and do something so bland and just beholden to what you've already done, it just seems so underwhelming because you could have literally done anything. You finally, you know, cut the shackles of continuity and lore, and you can, no pun intended, and you can just go wherever you want.
I like that. That's a good deep dive. Yeah. It's Data. No, lore. You're correct,
Lord.
Captain. Yeah. Remember when he was like the head of the Borg pirates? Remember that episode? Like,
oh, it was a two-parter. It was amazing.
The two-parter. Yeah. Did you like it? Maybe you liked it more than I did. I had some issues with it. We can go into
Well,
that. You tell
yeah,
me.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't revisited it in a while. I was watching when it first aired. So when it, you know, to a 10 or 11 year old, Data teaming up with the Borg is like the best thing in the world. I have not revisited it in a while. I have to be honest. So
the only thing I didn't like about it is that they, and this all stems back from the whole Hugh subplot, and that Hugh turned them into like really angry Borg, which is like, well, they're just a bunch of angry dudes now. You know, the Borg were so cool because they were so impassionate. You know, they were just so like, you know, we're going to assimilate you at some point in time. You got to get ready for it. And lore search him and it was like, we're going to kill everybody. Like they felt like they were pirates, but it was a good episode. I'll have to watch it again too. I haven't watched it in a long time. So maybe, you know, I'll have a little viewing on this and figure out if it's a good episode or not.
Yeah, it's been a while. I just remember liking it.
Yeah. Beverly Crusher was at the helm. Remember that?
Oh, that's right. She took command.
She took command, and she called back to that weird sun shield which they had created so they could destroy the Borg. Remember that?
That's right. That could cause a solar flare to destroy the Borg ship.
That's right, yeah. So there was all sorts of little callbacks. So they were finally starting to embrace the whole idea of kind of like a serialized nature. You know, it's like, well, people actually watch this. We don't have to have it kind of out of order. So,
yeah. And that was good because I loved when Troy was taking her command test. That was a great episode when she was taking the test, which makes sense that you would have to pass the test if you're going to command the starship.
Command the starship, yeah. It's like, it can't just be anybody, right? It's just like, who's next?
Because usually with Star Trek, it's like, oh, who's left on the bridge? You. Take the helm. It's like,
right.
No, it would make sense. Maybe there should be some minimum qualification
to command
the starship.
Exactly. And like, I mean, isn't like as like one of these things, and I'll you know, broach into this, is that they have like different watches, right? You can't be up like 24 hours a day. So who's in command from like, you know, 2 to, you know, 8 a.m., you know? I mean, and if Picard leaves, shouldn't they call that guy in as opposed to like, oh, you know, Troy, you're in charge. What? You know, I mean, like, why
right.
should that be? Shouldn't there be like, you know, Lieutenant Commander such and such who does the night shift?
Right.
Or,
And one thing that I think they're tapping into with the new movie for a little bit, that from what we saw is you know, with Star Trek, you forget that it's a 5-year mission. So really, we're seeing like the 76 most interesting days of that entire mission. It's more boredom than entertainment when you're out in deep space.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Now I kind of teased you a little bit, and I don't know if I'll hold on to this story until the movie comes out, but I may or may not have contributed to this movie being changed and becoming what it was. So it was a couple years ago in Vegas at the Star Trek convention. And you read that article I sent you?
I did.
Yeah.
I did indeed. I'd heard this. I'd heard that. Well, yeah. I'd read about it before I knew it was you.
Did you really?
I did. I'd read an article that said Star Trek Into Darkness voted worst Star Trek movie at the Vegas convention. And I was just like, wow. And I read it. I was like, yes, a passionate fan got up and convinced the audience. I'm like, well, that's fun. That's interesting. And then I heard, like, oh, it was Mike. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. It was me with two glasses of Tranya in me. It was me having just lost a role on CSI. And having a lot of frustration about that movie, and it was like number 6 or 5 on the list. I was like, come on, you guys, come on.
Yeah.
And there is footage of it. I'll send you that footage at some point in time. But so like, I like to think because after that things changed because they got rid of Orci and Kurtzman from the writing, and they brought in Pegg and all this sort of stuff. And so I'm taking upon myself, Dan, to believe that I have changed the Star Trek timeline, that I was the instigator, the one in every revolution. There's one man with a vision kind of thing that started that.
You're the Nero of these new movies. You have spun us into a different timeline.
Hello, Christopher. I'm here to change the timeline. What was that? What was that accent? Remember, wasn't that great? Eric Bagnio was like, just, it was
hi.
Just,
hi, I'm Nero. Like very kind of like it's like kind of middle management, kind of like in Milwaukee. It's like, hi, I'm Nero.
He was so courteous. He was
Hello.
So nice. Yeah, yes.
Like there's one where it's, I think the first time they ever see him on the Enterprise, the camera just kind of comes up to him and he just goes, "Hello." Like, oh, okay, hi.
It's so he's so polite and so pleasant, and you're right, so Midwestern. He's I don't know what prompted him to go for like a kind of like a Midwestern Milwaukee accent, you know. It's, we're going to board your
he
ship.
He came
now.
From the Sheboygan of Romulus.
Exactly. The second half of that film, of the first film, kind of fell off the rails a little bit, the second half, I feel like. But, you know, Nero did his best, but Nero as a bad guy, a little hot and cold on him, you know, because every time he talked to him.
Yeah. Good motivation. But
not earned. We didn't know who he was, right? We had to hear his backstory in the movie, which is always a problem. If we have to build up a character in the middle of a movie to be a bad guy, then it's like, well, why do we care? You know, I mean, he's more interesting.
And they cut out so much interesting stuff with him, like the fact that he was voluntarily just hanging out in the Klingon prison camp for however many years until he found out that it was time to make his move, and then he broke out.
Right,
like, that's
right.
So badass.
Yeah, that's. I feel like he probably could have a better plan, though. It's like, let me just take this ship and go back in time and do it again. You know, I mean, there was a lot of other options. But I mean, it was a fascinating backstory. You know, as we talk, I mean, about, I've mentioned this like before, but one of the reasons that Khan works so well is because for 15 years, we knew who that character was and he had a built-in backstory. We didn't have to build him up in the movie as much. We just had to see where
right.
he had transitioned to, right?
Exactly.
It's the same thing with Marvel Civil War, where like we know Tony Stark, we know what he's all about, so we don't have to like, why is he angry at Captain America? It's like we know who he is. We have this huge backstory. He became the Khan of Civil War. I'm putting that out there.
He did a little bit, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's with a lot of variances, but to build up this character, this Nero character, just kind of out of nothing, as they do with most of these characters, even Khan in the next one, it's like, well, who is he? What's he doing again? He loves his crew, but he blew up this place. And, you know, it's like, it's just too much to follow.
Well, that's what we always said, is just like they had that huge dramatic moment in Into Darkness where he goes, my name is Khan. And I almost like wish that, you know, I'd always said like the real reaction to the other side would be like, cut the character going like, okay, hi, I'm Jim.
Yeah, I know. Who? Yeah.
How you doing?
And
great. Why? Sure.
And I will probably get a little bit of flack for this because Benedict Cumberbatch is a great actor. But man, when he says Khan, his mouth opens really wide. Did you notice that?
We do this around the office a lot. Anytime we talk about Benedict Cumberbatch, but he over enunciates when he's dramatic.
Yeah.
He goes very wide.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Well, you know, maybe they'll bring him back in Star Trek IV. They've teased that. So now they haven't.
He's on ice.
He is on ice. So this would be a good chance to bring him back, right?
Yes.
Who knows? Maybe his career falters a little bit and he's looking for a job. They're like, hey, you want to do Star Trek IV? So let's put the movies on ice as well, Dan. This is the segue.
Okay,
I want you to hear that segue, Dan.
I love that segue. That's amazing.
It's a pretty good one. And let's talk about, have you seen the trailer for the new TV series?
I wouldn't call it a trailer so much. I guess the big reveal is that it seems like it's going to be more of an anthology series.
Yeah. That seems to be the one thing we seem to know more than anything else. Are you excited for this?
Yes, I am on board with that because I feel like the difficulty with maintaining a Star Trek series, particularly the last couple, is that once you've established who the crew is and that they're on a ship and what the ship can do, it's just variations on that.
Right.
And that can sustain for one or two or three or, you know, Next Gen did it for 7, arguably, depending on who you ask. I'd say Next Gen did it for about 4.
Yeah.
Not concurrently. I think 1's not great. 2's okay. 3, 4, 5, 6, great. 7, hit or miss.
Yeah.
Because you have to do things like, you know, they all evolve into spiders because you've run out of things to do on a ship.
It could have been a great episode if they done like 2-parter or 3-parter, but one episode, man, that was all over the place, wasn't it?
That was bizarre. So I think the biggest thing with Star Trek is you have to keep it fresh. And if you're going anthology series, I like that because then you can have one season set in the Kirk era where you can have that great set design and that great kind of throwback 60s feel. And then the next season you could do one set during the Borg. It's, you know, Wolf 359. You know, you can do a whole thing around that. I love that you can jump around into different eras of Star Trek and do all kinds of things. So I'm actually kind of excited for this.
Me too. I saw the trailer and it gave me no information. Zero. And yet I was still excited for some reason because they were excited. So I'm very curious to see what they come up with. I don't know if we went to go see the Star Trek concert when they came into town. Which was pretty cool. It was because they had a lot of the actual composers come out, which was great. You know, it's like, oh, you know, here's, you know, the guy who, you know, here's Cliff Edelman, you know, to direct Star Trek VI music. So it was really great. But they said like, hey, if you're part of Star Trek, if you're, you know, stand up, and they had Nichelle Nichols stand up and all sort of stuff. And they said, hey, we know the new series is shooting. If you're part of that, please stand up. And right in front of us, there was like six fairly attractive people who sort of looked at each other in their seats. And then they kind of all stood up kind of halfway and kind of looked and like waved. And I was like, is that the new cast? And so it was weird because they're all kind of like they were in like their 20s or 30s. And they were like, like pleasant enough. And they're either writers or actors. I couldn't decide, you know. And so I went up to him like during intermission. And I said, hey man, are you guys part of the new show? It's like, yeah, yeah. Or they said, we can't really say. And I said, are you the actors? And they kind of looked at each other and said, we really can't say. I was like, okay, fair enough. So
yeah.
I got a feeling that was the new cast, which was okay because they weren't like the most beautiful people in the world. You know, they looked like, you know, average human beings in the 24th century, 23rd. So, that excited me. That excited me a little bit too. It's like, oh, you know, maybe they're going to go for kind of like this gritty kind of, well, whatever they do. I mean, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, me too. And I like, especially if they go anthology, it's a lot easier to attract some really named talent if you're not saying, I want you to sign on for maybe 10 years of the show. You can say like, hey, we're doing an anthology. You're going to do 10 episodes and you're done. You can really, I think, attract some great writing talent, directing talent, acting talent that maybe you couldn't otherwise. Although I think they're going to be a little hamstrung by the fact that they're not on television. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
It's such a weird decision, isn't it? It feels like such a weird. I understand why they're doing it. They're trying to launch their all access CBS thing, but to not have it on network just feels like a vote of no confidence.
But people said that about Next Generation when they went into syndication. They said, like, you're doing a television series in syndication, a first-run television series in syndication for Star Trek? And I think a lot of people were skeptical about that. So who knows?
This is true. This is absolutely true. Yeah, that worked out great for them because then they had a lot more bargaining power overall and they could put it on whatever channel they wanted to. But then we're all going to have to pay, like, $6, you know, an episode,
yes,
basically, or, you know, a month, I guess, to see this. So I'll do it. I'm going to do it. So, you know, it's Star Trek. We got to watch Star Trek.
Yeah.
So that brings me into the final of our three-limbed creature of Star Trek, which is the fan stuff. And one of the things I was mentioning before before I called you on this podcast is I think one of the most significant things that J.J. Abrams did in this event that you were at is that he announced that they were dropping the lawsuit on Axanar, that they were settling it.
Yes.
Which
I don't think he cleared with anybody. That does not strike me as something that that Paramount would be like, yeah, sure, you can just drop that into the middle of it. Because it was not, it seemed to me like he just kind of was like, oh yeah, by the way, I don't know if it was calculated on his part to be like, I'm not going to keep this behind the scenes. I'm going to, you know, because the Axanar people didn't know about it because they were like, okay, well, great, but we'll believe it when we see it. But yeah, I wonder how calculated that was, if he kind of did that to sort of make sure that Paramount wasn't going to welch on it. But I think that's huge. I mean, I think that's a very complex discussion.
Boy, if he just dropped that in the middle of an event, boy, that's ballsy, right? I mean, only, you know, only Nixon can go to China, as they say in Star Trek VI, you know.
Exactly. He only relaunched the franchise and just directed the biggest grossing movie of all time. So I guess he felt he had a little leeway
he could
do whatever he wanted.
But it's the right decision, isn't it? I mean, overall, it's Axanar's kind
of... I think right now.
Yeah. Axanar's kind of a mess because they overfunded it and there's a lot of questions with it, but he knows the value of fan films from Star Wars.
Yes.
You know, I think
I don't think that any studio is going to win points by going after fan films.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I think Lucasfilm rightfully so embraced the fan community and said, hey, just, you know, they kept an eye on it, but they allowed people pretty fair latitude to do what they wanted.
Yeah.
I think the question comes into then, you know, what it's the money question, which is like, but are you generating money? Because
yes,
as soon as you start generating money and trying to sell it, that's where I think it goes a little into a gray area, because then you legitimately have some copyright issues.
Oh, absolutely. I think most of the fan films that have come so far has been like, hey, kickstart this so we can build a set and then we're going to release it for free. And that's great.
Right.
But this guy, he's raised like $1 million and he's paying actors good money. And so it's like, what are you doing with all that money? So I think Paramount rightly so had to send that out and say, you got to hold off on that. But I wonder if after the film screens, if Paramount might say, you know, actually we are going to sue you and you got to stop all that. Like, who knows? Right. I mean, maybe they'll
I think you've got to, they've got to do one or the other. I don't think they can hedge their bets. Now, I think what they can do is say, we just need proof that you're not making any money. If you could show me the sheets that says you raised X amount of money to make this movie and you put X amount of money into paying your actors, building sets, paying for a venue to screen it, you know, making your rewards and printing DVDs, whatever, that's fine. But, you know, I just want to make sure you're not making like $500,000 off this thing.
Right. Exactly. Because they're getting...
But I've actually met the people behind Axanar, and they're super nice, and they are very passionate about Axanar. We went over to their studio and filmed something different with some of their props for Screen Junkies. And they were very enthusiastic and just like, you know, they showed us their prelude to Axanar thing, and like they had posters and stuff. And like, I don't think for one minute that this is some kind of a cynical like money thing with them. Like, they are like, they are so behind and so passionate about making that movie. So yeah, I think it's a bad idea to try to litigate this in the courts, because you're suing people for loving you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and they have weird conversations of like, because one of their points is Klingon, the Klingon language, a copyrightable thing. You know, it's like, That's literally one of the things that Paramount said, no, the Klingon language is our intellectual property. It's like, how can a language be a property? If it's created, does it exist? You know what I mean? Like, it's such a briar patch, to get into an insurrection quote there, that it's best for them just to leave it all alone and say, go do your stuff. You know, if it comes too much, we'll push back again. But I will say, and I mentioned this to you a couple times, is that I'm enjoying one of the shows called Star Trek Continues. And I don't know if you've watched. Have you watched any of those? Have we talked about this or no?
I've watched a little bit. I watched a couple of them. I agree that they are. My main thing is just it's a little difficult for me when you're trying to do the same characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just those characters. So there's already a little bit of a waxworks effect when you're trying to say, like, this is Spock, like, but it's not really.
Yeah, it's sort of the problem they're coming into a little bit with the movies as well. It's like, well, how much does Zachary Quinto act like Spock, and how much does he act like how he wants to act? Carl Urban nails it as McCoy, and Pine just does his own thing. He's not even, you know, trying to be William Shatner. So you get...
Nor, as he should not be. It would be patently ridiculous for him to be up there trying to do a Shatner impression.
Completely, yeah, yeah. But like, I'm starting to like these shows. I've got to be honest. I shouldn't like them. They're not well written. They're not, you know, well acted, you know, but there's something about them which is endearing enough. And I'm on like the sixth episode now. And it's like, you know, these people are doing it because they have a passion for it. You know, they're not trying to make money off it. They're just doing it because they love it. And so there's a lot of misses in this, but there's more hits. And, you know, as I look, it's like, when are they ever going to complete the mission of the 5-year mission on the original series? Never. They're never going to do that, right? These guys are doing it.
Never.
So, I mean, one of the reasons why CBS has been so reluctant to do anything with the franchise is they still make huge amounts of money off of the original show. You know, I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
They're just like, we make tons of money off of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, Shatner, Nimoy, and DeForest Kelly, you know? So why should we change that? So we're never going to get that. So for me, it's like, you know, it's fan fiction, but I can live with it. So I don't know. Watch a
but
couple
it's
more.
It's massively impressive. Yeah. I mean, listen, that's why I can never be like, oh, what a piece of garbage. Because, you know, even if, and I agree with you, like, even if it's not the best acted or sometimes the best written, it's just like, my God, the amount of time and effort as a Star Trek fan, I respect that. And I think you kind of have to. It's like, wow, they really love Star Trek so much that they're going to put all this time and effort into it.
Yeah, it's their dedication to it, and they just kickstarted, like, and they did it right, and they said, this is what we're going to buy. They bought a new set. They have the engineering room. They bought the engineering room, basically. They built that, and it looks great. And they're going to get some exteriors now. They're going to buy some exterior stuff. So you can see where the money's being spent. It's like, oh, this is being spent on that. You know, it makes me happy. Like, when I watch it, I'm like, okay, I can get into this. You know, that guy's sort of acting like Kirk. That guy's sort of acting like Spock. You know, I buy into it. And then I just close my eyes and my brain to the plot and the acting. You know, it's like, you know, we do kind of what we have. So I think there's,
but
like...
But fandom is turning so cynical now. And I mean, we see it every day here. Whether it's our fans or we see, like, people that just respond to the Marvel movies, or Batman v Superman was particularly bad, but it's like fandom has kind of taken this turn that to be so nasty and cynical and sometimes and just brutal, and not always, but often.
Yeah.
It's something refreshing to see people that are fans of something and they love it so much that there's no cynicism. There's just a love there. It's just like, I love Star Trek and I'm going to do this show, and who cares if people say it's not good, or who cares if maybe it could be shot better. I love it, and this is what I want to do. And I just, you don't see that much pure love for things. It's more and more rare that you see it. It's people that become defensive of it and just say, like, that's not what I want. Screw you. I don't want that. That looks stupid. That looks awful. So it's so good to see that kind of positive side of it.
You're absolutely right, Dan. That was a great speech. I'm going to put some music under that, by the way, when I edit this, because it was so good. I'm not kidding. I'm going to score that, because I'm going to put some good Kirk speech music on it. But you're right. It's so easy for us to hate something because, you know, that it's, you're on the offensive. You know, you're on the offense. Oh, I don't like that. You know, and I mean, obviously, you know, you can't, I mean, the part of it is exactly what you do. I mean, right? I mean, that's what you guys do a little bit, but
yeah.
People who are less talented than you guys are taking shots at this stuff, and it just comes out as angry and hateful.
Well, and I think, yeah, and what we, you know, because people, that's what I always say, like, well, you guys talk crap all the time on stuff, like, that's what you do. And first of all, like, me personally, I've found in the last, particularly in the last year or two, a year and a half, where I've kind of experienced more firsthand what that venom feels like. Personally, I have softened more. Like, whereas I might want to jump down the throat of something like that first Star Trek trailer, having seen what it's like to be on the receiving end of that, I kind of have softened myself a bit. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to reserve judgment. Yeah, I have this qualm and I'll say that I like this, but I'm going to reserve judgment. And then secondly, it's like, oh, well, honest trailers talks crap all the time. Like, well, we kind of feel like we try to be honest. That's the whole point. So we're not trying to just trash something just to trash it. We're not going to say Deadpool is a crappy movie. We're going to find something funny to say about it.
Sure.
You know, or yeah. Find it, you know, it's like our whole point is not just to trash things. It's to kind of have fun with it. Or if it's terrible, point out how it's terrible.
Exactly. I think that's, you know, Star Trek, the original series is such a great, like middle ground of good, bad and meh, you know. I mean, like Nicholas Meyer said when he watched it, all the episodes. It's Harv Bennett. He said, I watched all the episodes, and a third of them were transcendent and great. A third of them were just meh, and a third of them were absolutely terrible. And you know, if you go like Star Trek, there are bad episodes. You know, but if you can still like love them on some level, you can point out that they're bad. We don't have to be like this cult. But if you can still say, you know, that was pretty bad, but overall, I still love it. I think you're onto something, you know? So it's
right.
It's finding that middle ground. It's again, it's the logic and passion, and in the middle is Captain Kirk, right? So we have to be more Captain
yep.
Kirk in our lives than to be like the logical tearing it apart, or the passionate, this is terrible, you know, finding flaws. It's whatever that middle ground is. And I think you guys do a good job in Screen Junkies, you know, because my son loves you and he loves everything you guys do. My son. And he shows me this stuff every once in a while. It's like, you know, you guys make insightful points. And we can talk about Star Trek. We can say, oh, you know, God, that was a bad episode, but Star Trek is still great. So I think that's what society has to figure out, is like, what's too far, right?
Right. And I'm not saying you can't be passionately against something. Just be, you know, don't just blindly spew hate. Just say like, you know, like I will passionately rail against Star Trek in the Darkness, but I'll tell you why.
Right.
Why I don't like it. And not just like, that sucks. Like, yeah. You know, no, come on, dig a little deeper. Do a little analysis. Tell me why. Why do you think it sucks?
Exactly.
And then let's have a discussion about that.
I completely agree. It's finding that balance. It's finding where, you know, if you can listen to someone's counter argument and see value in what they're saying, then I think, you know, I think we're all on the right path. This has turned into like some of like therapy session, hasn't it? I mean, we're really kind of, you know, digging deep in this. So
let me tell you, I've had a rough couple weeks over here. I need it a little bit right now. So this is very much me venting about things in general.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
You know,
is everything okay? Are you
No, it's good. We've had some issues where it's like we put out stuff on some of the movies that are coming out this summer, where we kind of just tried to look at the other side. Like, why is everyone so against this movie? And it's just the avalanche of hatred that we got just for kind of broaching the subject of like, why does everyone hate this movie before they've even seen it? You know, and it's just like, we just got this avalanche of just like, you're terrible. You're awful people. It's just like, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So you're really kind of, you're really getting like, you know, both barrels from these people who are just, they love you because
and it comes out of a twisted form of love. You know, it's because people love these things, but they cling to them so passionately sometimes that when somebody comes along and says, hey, I'm going to kind of try it this new way, people go like, no. And it just becomes like, oh man, just the fury and the fierceness that they can throw at you. Sometimes you're like, wow. Okay.
The country is becoming far more divisive, isn't it? It's really, I mean, it's just, we're learning to find our opinion and stick to it no matter what. you know, and even if and not listen to anyone else. Like, no, this is the right way, right? I mean, you know, politics is, you know, certainly leading that charge, but certainly Star right. Wars versus Star Trek, Marvel versus DC, man, you've got your lines drawn, and man, you're going to hate this, you're going to love it, and your mind is not going to change.
It's like when Star Wars came out, we were doing videos, and the main thing that I said about a week afterwards was like, well, Force Awakens, whether you loved it or you hated it, people are angry at you. So it's just like there's some things that just you can't win. You can't win because both sides are entrenched and they're going to yell at each other. And there's no middle ground. You know, that's a lot of what we try to do sometimes here on Screen Junkies is, you know, we have movie fights, which is about, you know, you fight different, debate different topics. But we also want to try to let's be a middle ground. Let's talk about this. Let's get a bad. Let's get the positive, the negative. Let's meet in the middle. Let's have a Kittimer conference here. Let's have a, you know, let's meet in the middle here.
Without the assassination attempt, right? I mean, you know, can we...
Without the assassination attempt, obviously, yes.
Yes, which was then... Remember, like, did you ever see deleted scenes of that where it was, like, revealed to be one of the Starfleet guys as well, who was in a mask?
Oh, yeah, they, like, Scooby-Dooed him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was, like, it wasn't Rene Auberjonne, was it? I thought it was some weird, like, it was like, oh, look, it's a mask. It's like, oh, my God, it's a Starfleet guy. Like, whoa, what are you doing now? It was so weird.
Yeah, it was really weird, which I love that movie because it's a whodunit, but that was a little too much whodunit.
That movie has really, like, grown in popularity in the past, like, 20 years, you know, 20, 30 years. It's really interesting to watch how, you know, because back in the day, it was a pretty good movie. You know, I liked it, you know, it's like, oh, it's good. But now... I watched it again. I was like, this is a really good movie. This is on par with, you know, it's not as good as Star Trek II, but it's definitely up there.
I think this might be a different podcast episode, but I think I could easily mount an argument that Star Trek VI is the second best original series movie.
I don't know if I'd fight you on that. I don't, I mean, because I look and, I mean, you know, Star Trek III is good. I like it. I like the first half a lot. Star Trek IV is great, but it certainly has aged not well.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this one actually still holds. You know, the ideas of disparate people coming together and working out their differences is, you know, it's still very salient in this day and age. So I don't know if I'd fight you on that. Although... I'm coming around Star Trek V, so there may have to be some variance on that. I watched that the other day, and I was like,
"Oh dear."
Yeah, I know, but I never watched it in the theater like you with Nemesis. I knew it was gonna be bad, and then I've been watching it recently, and I'm trying to get Lawrence Luckinbill, who played Cybok. I'm trying to get him on the show, and I've almost got him, because I think he did. I think his stuff is really good.
He's
Dan, are you there? Are you there, Dan?
I'm here. I'm contemplating what you're saying. I'm trying to find my middle ground.
All right.
but it's difficult.
It is difficult. Now, I need to go back. I mean, there's a lot of garbage in it. But a lot of it, let's save this for another time. I want to talk to you again, Dan. If you have time, if you're not super busy, I want to
call
you
again. You know what? We'll find a time. I'll go back. You know what? I'll go back. I'll rewatch it. We'll set a time. And we'll talk about Star Trek V.
Watch Star Trek V, and then do me a favor and watch at least one of those Star Trek Continues episodes all the way through. All right?
Yeah.
Because I think they're getting okay. There's one called Lolani, which surprised me, and then this latest one called Stand Not Between the Dragons, which is a very Star Trek-y title.
That's a Star Trek title, yeah.
It's very... But it's... They're getting better, and I'm like, oh... If you just did that and did that, it's almost okay. So watch those two, and then I want to talk to you again about this stuff. Because I don't know if maybe I'm losing my mind on this stuff, or maybe, like you, I'm starting to mellow to Star Trek. I'm starting to, like, be more accommodating, more infinite diversity, infinite, you know, combinations of bad storytelling. But whatever it is, you have the most intellectual mind out of, you know, most of my friends in this stuff. So you and I need to really put our heads together and have our own Kittimer, I think, on this.
I like this. Well, let's do this.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll let you go now, Dan, because this has been, I don't think it can get any better, unless you've got anything better. Although, if I don't talk to you before I go to Riverside, Iowa, Dan, because I'm going there to find out who I am and find out about Captain Kirk, what piece of information, what wisdom or knowledge would you give me as I make this journey?
Oh, wow.
It doesn't have to be big, yeah.
I'm trying to think. I would just say I know that you identify very deeply with Captain Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
That's your favorite character, and I like this journey of self-discovery, and I would just say take a moment while you're there and find the spot in Riverside that you think most represents who you are, and not just who Captain Kirk is.
Wow, I like that. That's wow. Yeah, Dan, you're just spouting all sorts of wisdom here. My God, this is that's great. this is the most insightful conversation you and I have ever had, Dan, in the past 12 years. This is so.
I know. I feel like one of us should build the other one. I'm not sure who should build who, but.
No, it's great. It's great, and I'll circle it around again. You know, and say how happy I am that. You have always been a good person, Dan. You are just a good person, and I've always enjoyed working with you. And every chance I can get to work with you, I'm always thrilled. And I'm so happy that you are finding your destiny. You know, this is so great. And so for me to be able to have this conversation about Star Trek, you know, between you and I, and to say you're a good friend, it's why I'm doing this podcast, is because I can figure these things out.
And Mike, you're a great friend of mine. I will come play a vampire for you anytime. Just give me a call.
I love that. If we all work together, we won't be scared. That's my favorite thing.
Exactly.
Put vampire teeth in Dan Merle and have him try and talk. There's nothing better. There's nothing better.
So Dan, it's so good. So
what can we see you on next? You're going to be on Film Fights. Is this correct? What's your next one coming up?
I'm on movie fights most weeks. I'm fact-checking. I'll be on fighting again at some point, hopefully soon. We're trying to put together a big match soon. But you can see me on Screen Junkies on YouTube or Screen Junkies Plus. If you want to check out a bunch of our other stuff, I have a weekly report show called Summer Movie Report, where we break down the box office and stuff. But if you want to check that out, you can find that on iTunes, the iTunes store, or ScreenJunkies.com. There's a free month trial. You can try it if you hate it. No harm, no foul.
No, exactly.
I just love talking about, we had one of our shows, we had a Monday Night Raw hosted by my friend Nick Mundy, who was out of town, and he said, okay, you get the show for a week and you can do whatever you want. And I think I might have emailed you about it, but I said, okay, we're doing a show about Star Trek. So
that's right. Yeah.
This is so much fun. I love doing this.
That's right. I can't remember. I was doing something. I think it was like teaching or something with my kids or something. I was like, oh, I want to be there. And it was like, I couldn't. So the next time he goes out of town, we got to have that.
We're doing it.
And are you going to be down at Comic-Con this year?
Yes, I'll be down at Comic-Con. I can't say, we're still working out the details, but I will say, you know, we'll be covering the convention as usual. And then we have a really big Screen Junkies thing planned separate that we're not quite ready to announce yet, but it's going to be really fun. And really, I don't want to sound too Trump-like. It's going to be really fun. It's going to be huge. It's going to be really fantastic, really tremendous. No, it's going to be a good time. So if you are a Screen Junkies fan, keep an ear out, because we're going to be announcing that real soon.
And look for one of those guys who's handing out those little flyers outside the convention, because that's where you'll find it, right? That's going to be you, right? It's like, you know, can I check this
exactly
thing out? Those weird things.
I'll have a whistle around and like wear a neon something or other, and yeah, I'll be handing out flyers.
Comic-Con's a huge mess these days. It's so much nonsense. I went to WonderCon. I don't know if I told you this, but I went to WonderCon this year, and it's so much more relaxed. It's so much more.
We were there too.
Oh, were you? Oh, okay. I took.
Yeah, I agree. It is, and we went to Seattle Comic-Con, and it was fantastic.
Was it? Oh, wow.
Yeah, you're finding more and more of these regional conventions. They have that kind of local feel that I think Comic-Con used to have.
It was just so nice to walk through a convention floor and not feel like, you know, I was, you know, face to face with like 1,000 people, you know. What's the episode of the old series where like it was they were in that place where like the Mark of Gideon, where the entire world is completely overpopulated and like people like walking by the window.
Oh.
Like, it always feels like the Mark of Gideon whenever at Comic-Con, just like shoulder to shoulder with like the throng of humanity. So it was nice to go to WonderCon, but we've deviated. Dan, I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for talking to me, buddy. And let's if you're up for it, let's do it again, man. This is great.
I love it. Just let me know. I always love talking about Star Trek.
Oh, me too. Me too. I'll talk to you later, all right?
All right, Mike. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You got it. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. That's Dan Merle. Dan Merle is a great guy. And people know him and like him now. Some people have issue with him now. You heard about that. That is neither here nor there. But Dan Merle's a great guy, and he likes Star Trek, which means that if you like Star Trek, you're a great person. And you know what? I'm starting to come under the belief that I might be a great person too. Or maybe just a good person. I like where this is going. I like that you're on this journey with me. In 3 weeks, I'm going off to Riverside, Iowa. I'm going to podcast there. You've got to go on this part with me. And then I'm going to go to Comic-Con. And then I'm going to go to the Las Vegas Star Trek convention. And then we're going to have the 50th anniversary. And then they're going to have the new Star Trek series. You have to be here with me on this. This is so great. Wow. The journey continues. And you get to be part of it. Because you're listening to I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek.
Distract sequence completed and engaged.
Don't you understand?
Non-sequitur, your facts are uncoordinated.
The train comes in, everybody runs.
Blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah.
You're out of line, mister.
Yes, but it's a correct assessment.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island, yeah, and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you